Good afternoon, IABC members, and welcome to our live webinar with Sharon Habib of Outside In. I'm Lydia Tay, Vice President of Professional Development for the BC chapter of IABC, and it's my great pleasure that 30 of you are joining us today. I'd like to take a brief moment to thank our sponsor, CNW, for providing this live webinar, and I'm delighted to tell you a little bit more about the proceedings. Sharon's presentation will last around 40 minutes, at the end of which there'll be a 15-minute question and answer session. You'll be able to view the slides that Sharon will be speaking to, and you'll see at the top of the orange bar that there are some directional arrows. These will help you move through the slides, and you'll be the ones to click forward when Sharon prompts you. If you have questions during the event, and also questions for Sharon, please do send them along to pdevents@iabc.bc.ca. You'll see this email address to the left-hand side of the slides, and you'll see that when you hover your mouse over it, it does light up so that you can go straight to that email address. It is followed by a full stop after the CEA, and this is not needed to email me and will result in a bounce back. It's just pdevents@iabc.bc.ca. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Sharon. Reading her bio, I feel that she was born to be a communicator. Her career has taken her from brand management to marketing and communications management, and most recently to consulting. She founded her award-winning consultancy, Outside In Communications, with her business partner, Catherine Ducharme, working out of Gastown, but with clients stretching across BC and beyond. Her client roster is impressive and includes BC Cancer Agency, North Shore Credit Union, Museum of Anthropology at UBC, the College of Registered Nurses in Alberta, BC, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, just to name a few. It's my great pleasure to hand you over to Sharon to learn about the seven secrets of a killer brand. Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks, Lydia, and hi, everybody. It's always difficult to do one of these presentations when you can't see people. That's, I guess, the downside of being a communicator is that you're used to being part of a conversation. Anyway, as Lydia mentioned, I am from Outside In Communications, and our focus is on helping audiences, organizations engage with their audiences through their brand and through everything that they say and do. And really, our work is grounded in the belief that brand underpins communication. So as Lydia mentioned, we've defined corporate brands for organizations like the Cancer Agency and the Museum of Anthropology, among many. We've also defined employer brands for the likes of UBC, and we've even branded professions like the profession of opticianry and registered nursing. So we really are focused on how brands are communicated and experienced both inside an organization and outside. And today I'm just lucky to be sharing this opportunity with you about what we've come to learn as the seven secrets for a successful brand. So if you go to the orange bar at the top of the screen and click on the right arrow to the next slide, you should see a slide with a package, beautifully packaged gift. And I guess the first thing we need to do is to ask ourselves, what's inside that box? What is a brand? And you'll click onto the next slide. And here you have it. In short, a brand is an experience, a perception, and a reputation. And brands are experienced in many different ways, whether it's through a product quality or how easy a product is to use, whether it's through your standard of service, or whether it's the experience you're having on an organization's website. All of that is how you experience the brand. So there's many touch points through which a brand is expressed. If you'll click onto the next slide, you'll see these four points here, and there are themes throughout this presentation, really sum up Outside In's philosophy on brand. Basically, brands start on the inside. They're driven by what people in your organization do and say every day. That means that the brand's not only marketing shtick, everybody in the organization has accountability for the brand. And when organizations really and truly know what their brand is, and they recognize that it's the glue that holds everything together coherently, it becomes a really powerful strategic asset. So brands are not woo-woo, fuzzy, and fluffy things like they have been thought to be. They are real, and they actually matter a great deal. So So we're going to learn what the first secret is by clicking on to the next slide. And really, secret number one is the one and only starting point for a successful brand. And that is that you need to have a deep understanding of who you truly are as an organization. And you need to define that in words. Because when your brand is defined in words, it gives the organization a tool that creates a shared understanding and a common language for the brand. One thing I think I should point out about brands is that they usually have one foot in current reality and another foot in future aspirations. Whatever your aspirations are, your brand will always need to be based on who you are at your essence. You can change what you do, but you will always be who you are. So knowing who you are is really important, and you'll see that later in one of the other secrets. Funnily enough, we've heard many of our clients say, oh, well, we know who we are. But when we ask them to, they can't really put it in words consistently. And so knowing who your brand is in words and gives you a consistent and powerful tool to use. Let's go to the next slide. The trouble we find with brands starts when this foundational element of knowing who you are and having it framed in words is missing, or where it's inadequate. So I'm going to put out a few statements and think about whether you've ever heard them said in your current organization or in one of your previous employers. Here we go. Our brand is not well known enough. Or, staff don't know what our brand is, it's being used inconsistently. Or, we have a hard time explaining what we're about. Or, our customers don't get us. So if any of those sound familiar, in 100% of the cases where we've heard these statements, the problem boils down to the same issue, that the brand was never grounded in an adequate foundation of a deep and shared understanding of who you are. So let's talk a bit about that foundation on the next slide. To get to this deep understanding of who you are, you need to do research. And you need to hear from the right people right across the organization, as well as people external to your organization who know you, who can give you a true reflection. And during this research, you not only need to be considering who you are, but you need to be considering your future aspirations as well. Because remember I said brands have one foot in current reality and usually another in the future. Once you have clarity, once you've been able to distill from this who you are at your essence, you can define your brand in words. An interesting aside is when Outside In was starting out 7 years ago, we had to get outside help to help us define our brand. And that might seem a little crazy because branding is what we do all the time. The problem is when you're on the inside of the bottle, you can't read the label. So trying to do this for yourself is challenging. We know we tried, but a lot of organizations do, and they do quite a good job too. But let's take a look at an organization that we probably all know who has done a good job of defining their brand in words and understanding who they are. So if you go to the next slide, that would be WestJet. And now, they're not our client, but we can see evidence that they have a clearly defined brand. And it's not really hard to figure out what that brand definition is about. It centers around care. Because it's clear that they care a lot about the customer experience. They certainly recognize that it goes beyond just providing efficient flight service or a safe ride, because after all, one aircraft is pretty much like another. But what they get is that brands are driven from the inside and that their people are the ones that make a difference to the passenger's experience. It's also clear to us that they care about their staff, and that they recognize that it's the staff who are delivering the brand experience on a daily basis, because they clearly empower their staff. So if you've ever flown WestJet, you pick up that brand personality by the way the staff interact with passengers across the airwaves. And it's not hard for them to deliver an authentic brand experience time and time again, because they actually hire the right kind of people who live the brand. So WestJet's a great example of a company that knows who they are and also knows what they want to be, which looks to me like more of what they are. So if we go on to the next slide, secret number two, and this is a well-known secret, is brands must be authentic. I'm sure you can figure out that that picture on the slide is actually a hand, a beautifully painted hand is that. If you go to the next slide, this is just the bottom line on what authenticity is. It's to be who you are, do what you say, deliver what you promise, and do it every time, all the time. And that's the bottom line on secret number two. So if we go to slide number, the next slide, it's secret number three. This is important to realize that the logo is servant, not king. Branding exercises that are primarily driven by getting a new and shiny logo, that branding is doomed in the long term. This is not to say that the logo is not important. It definitely has a place, but if you go to the next slide, the logo is not the brand, and the brand is not the logo. As we said, the brand is the experience, the perception, and the reputation. So that begs the question then, well, what's the role of the logo? So next slide. Brands are basically expressed in three ways: verbally, experientially, and visually. And a logo is part of the visual language that expresses the brand. It's that sort of at-a-glance identifier that people come to associate with the organization. A good logo should be based on a solidly defined brand. So verbal comes first and then visual. And when the logo sort of is grounded in that well-defined brand, it becomes that picture that speaks a thousand words. So while I was preparing this presentation, I came across this organization, Nobody's Children Foundation. I don't know who they are. I don't think they're based in Canada. But I looked at the logo for a long while because it caught my eye, and I tried to figure out whatever I could that the logo was telling me, and then I went and I looked on their website, and lo and behold, the logo tells a really good story. So they're a foundation that helps orphans in places like Kosovo and Syria, like really vulnerable children. And that whole logo expresses that vulnerability with those wavy, wobbly lines. But it's also very hopeful in that there's love and an attachment in the middle where children find friendship and support. And bottom line, that's what they're all about. So that picture is worth a thousand words. If you go to the next slide, is that we just need to bear in mind the context of the logo and what its role is. It's part of the wrapping, and the wrapping is important because it's meant to attract and catch attention, make you stand out at a glance. But it is just the visual language. So organizations that focus all their brand efforts on the logo actually shortchange themselves, because there are two other ways that the brand is expressed that need to be paid attention to, and that is how you describe yourself and speak of yourself and the experience. So the next slide, and the bottom line here, is that no matter how beautiful your logo or your look and feel is, the customer will always remember the experience. So the next slide, we're going to look at an example of a client of ours, and that is the College and Association of Registered Nurses of Alberta, and we'll abbreviate that to CARNA. We've been working with CARNA on an extensive branding initiative for probably more than a year, and all this time we've not touched the logo, and in fact we're not going to be touching the logo. That logo is going to stay the same for the next few years at least, but everything else has radically changed. And that's just because of the way they're prioritizing and their business goals, that they're not touching the logo right now. For now, their efforts quite admirably are focused on branding from the inside, working on the stuff that most matters in getting them to where they want to be. And the whole purpose in their branding is to positively impact the experience of their primary target audience, which is the Registered Nurses of Alberta. So we started with doing the necessary research to uncover their authentic brand essence, and we also looked very closely at who they want to be. And we defined that too. So we wrapped up their brand definition in words that represents who they are, who they aspire to be. And then we created a roadmap or strategy to help them to grow towards their aspirational brand in a way that remains authentic. And this has actually been an incredibly powerful exercise for them, to the extent that they're courageously making a dramatic shift that allows for brand-led culture change. And we'll share a little bit more about what else they're doing with you later. If you click to the next slide, secret number four, which is, in order to build brand momentum, you need a plan. And I just mentioned that Carla is following this roadmap or strategic plan that's really taking them along a very purposeful and focused path to where they want to be. And this is what you need for any brand to achieve its goals. It needs to have a plan or strategy that keeps it focused. So if you go on to the next slide, we said that a brand is expressed through basically everything you say and do. So that roadmap, as I said, is there to keep you focused and to keep you on track. And in the end, that strategy must support your primary business goals, must help you achieve them. It must support all areas of business, cutting across the silos. In fact, a brand is a great leveler because it ties all the silos together under a single purpose. The strategy needs to support the uptake of the brand and how it's expressed throughout the organization and by everyone. It should support the visual language, so the visual brand consistency, and then it needs to support the experience through every touch point so that experience is consistent no matter whether somebody phones you, emails you, or accesses a service or your product. Recognizing that this is everything the brand is, it stands to reason then that it seriously needs leadership support. Leadership needs to appreciate its value, brand's value, and needs to be committed to providing the resources to manage and grow the brand. If we go to the next slide, when I speak about touch points, this is just a snapshot of some of the touch points that brand strategies quite frequently address. And it all depends on an organization's touch points and priorities as to which ones the brand strategy focuses on. But needless to say, brand strategies span many years in order to align all these touch points. On to the next secret slide, the next slide. Secret number five is related to the fact that if brands are driven from the inside, then it's obviously the staff who are the ones doing it. So whether they're directly contributing to the customer experience or supporting the organization in other ways, they're impacting the brand. So it's important to get staff involved in the brand and on board. On to the next slide. What's astounding is that a recent survey found that only 41% of employees said that they know what their company stands for and what makes it different from their competitors. This means that most organizations are not getting the maximum return from the brands that they could be getting. Something to think about. On to the next slide then. So you hear about the corporate brand and you hear about the employer brand, but the truth is that an organization has only one brand, but it has multiple audiences. So it has internal audiences and external audiences, and those audiences will experience different facets of the brand, but it's always the same diamond, just different facets. So the bottom line is that if staff are delivering the brand, they should be experiencing it. And the reason is, on the next slide, that staff are among your best brand ambassadors. Just think about WestJet. Their staff is clearly passionate about the brand, and the passengers can feel it. Of course, customers are also good brand ambassadors, and you never want to overlook that. But coming back to staff, in order for them to deliver the brand consistently, you need to inspire them and immerse them in the brand. And you do that through training and education, really useful brand guidelines. You know, we find that routinely brand style guidelines are often not that useful. In many cases, they're most useful to the people who are going to be building signage, who need to know all the measurements and that kind of thing. So you need really useful guidelines that give staff an idea of what the brand values are, how they're supposed to behave, how they're supposed to speak. So they need a messaging platform. And then other tools that help them to keep the brand consistent so they don't go off inventing their own new PowerPoint templates and that kind of thing. So back to Kana on the next slide. Let's see what they've done to involve their staff and get them on board. So we involved them very deeply during the research phase of the brand, and we kept them informed along the way. And then once the brand was defined, we educated them and provided very comprehensive brand guidelines that outline behaviors, what you need to do to represent the brand experientially and verbally. And like I said, in Kana's case, we're not doing anything visually yet. So our brand guidelines don't go that far. They still have their old visual guidelines that they work with on that score. But part of a very big shift in their brand was to shift their tone. And they communicate with their target audience predominantly in the written word. So it was really important that we educated staff on the new tone. So everybody went through brand writing workshops and writing style. And after that, they went and reworked all their written materials. And we've just completed a brand communications experience audit. So how is the brand being experienced through communication? And we've noticed a dramatic shift just because they were equipped with how to do it. So we did that for them. And then the other thing that they're doing is to base their website rebuild on the new brand, and because they connect with their audience through the online medium as well, through applications, software applications, that kind of thing. All of that is being underpinned now by brand behaviors. So right now, I believe we have somebody who's just joined us, and we're on slide 24. So for the newcomer, if you can just go to the top orange bar at the top of the slides, use the right-hand arrow and click through actually to slide 25, because we're going on to the next slide. I have to say, there are very few occasions when it's good to be a control freak. In fact, I only know of one, and that is when it comes to managing the brand. If you go on to the next slide, brands obviously need to be managed. And they need to be managed closely. So that's the bit about being a control freak. Traditionally, brands are managed in the marketing area or marketing communications. And because brand is a strategic asset that glues the organization together cohesively, that brand manager needs to be somebody who is respected by senior leadership right down to the bottom. And so they need to have clout, and they need to be at the strategic table. We often see that that doesn't happen, and it is a secret to brand success. So we mentioned that in managing the brand, you need useful guidelines that need to be documented, people need to be educated, and you need to have support tools. And then it's really good to do regular audits of the brand, annual audits really, every 12 to 18 months, just to make sure that everything's going according to plan. By way of an example here on the next slide, I was the brand manager at North Shore Credit Union some years ago, and literally within the last 3 weeks, they've rebranded as Blue Shore Financial, so they don't look exactly like this anymore, but this is a great case study. So the brand was very well defined, and at its essence, its brand is financial wellness. And that would be not necessarily being wealthy, but being financially well in a way that enables you to live out your healthy West Coast lifestyle, because that's pretty much what the North Shore is all about. So the brand was very closely managed, and absolutely pervasive. We even defined our photography style, and I won't go into the details of what that was, just in the interest of time, but there are two photographs there to show you North Shore Credit Union in two different ad campaigns. When I left at that time, we had started to align the internal experience with the external brand experience. So, for example, we stopped serving staff donuts and pop at meetings and gave them healthier alternatives like brand muffins and juice in the spirit of the brand. But what I did want to show you on this slide is the logo. So North Shore Insurance Services is part of North Shore Credit Union. It is a sub-brand. For legal reasons, it has to be a separate organization, but we kept it accruing brand equity to the mother brand, so it's very similar looking. But take a look at the World Mountain Bike Festival that we were the title sponsor of, and we broke the golden rule of brand logos, which is don't muck with the logo, and we did, and we did it with a lot of strategic thought behind it. In our target market, in our demographic area, we had over 95% recognition, so it's a well-known brand, and we felt that we could do this. And the reason we wanted to be so prominent but still related to the event was because that's where our target audience is going to be hanging out. So it was very carefully thought about. But what you should take away from this presentation is don't muck with the logo. Don't go changing your logo. It's very seldom that one should do that. On to the next slide, secret number 7. And that is to prevent leaking brand equity from the master brand by controlling runaway sub-brands. Sub-brands have to be really carefully thought about, so this is a cautionary tale. If we go to the next slide, slide 29, without strong controls for a brand, it's very easy for departments or employees to say, oh, let's brand this program or that service or this piece of communication. The reality is that sub-brands are seldom warranted, but frequently used. If a sub-brand is to exist, and there's good reason why some sub-brands should exist, they should really be based on strategic merit and should in the most part live in relation to the master brand in such a way that accrues equity to both brands. On to the next slide to see an example. So this is a client of ours, AMSA. Their logo is right at the top, and I know I had to point it out to you given all the other logos on this page. All of the rest were their sub-brands. So sub-branding was a runaway train at AMSA. During our brand research, we found that only one of these sub-brands really warranted being a sub-brand, and that was the Safe Harbor program, which is on the right of the slide. And actually, at the time, Safe Harbor was better known than AMSA, so our task was to define AMSA's brand and help them to build brand recognition and get better known in light of Safe Harbor. So if you go on the next slide, you'll see here's what we advised them, and that was to absorb all the sub-brands except for Safe Harbor, because Safe Harbor was well known, and actually it was their flagship program. And because it's good sub-brand strategy, we always recommend that brands look like first cousins. Their designer retroactively created the master look and feel for the master brand based on the sub-brand's established look. And of course it goes without say that the refreshed brand also is firmly based in the verbally defined brand. So on to the next slide, and this is sort of the closing portion of our presentation. Let's see a brand that we believe has all 7 secrets in action, and that's MailChimp. You've probably heard of it, or you might even use it because they have over 4 million users. But for those of you who don't know, MailChimp helps you create or send or track your email newsletters. So on to the next slide, reminding ourselves that secret number 1 is know who you are. next slide. MailChimp clearly knows who it is, right down to its personality, and they're very clear about what they want to achieve, which is quality customer experience. Their fun mascot and even their name reflects their personality. The chimp's name is Fred or Freddy, and that's short for Frederick von Chimpenheimer IV. Lots of personality there. Even the name MailChimp came about as a joke. Their founder, Ben Chestnut, he used to say to clients, "Oh, you've got a business to run, so don't go coding the stuff that you could hire any monkey to do." And MailChimp was born out of that. So a great personality. Their tools, it's actually a great product. I mean, they're not a client of mine, so I'm not getting out of giving them a push. Their tools enable their customers to deliver more creative and more effective emails. So they actually see creativity as a very key attribute of their brand, and they see that that's what keeps their brand fresh and unique. So creativity is actually a tangible part of their culture, and it's pervasive from the top down through and through, and you're going to see more of that as we go through the section. So pardon me, on to the next slide to remind ourselves. Secret number two is that logo is servant, not king. So let's see if they get that. On to the next slide. Well, there are four different iterations, actually five, of their logo, if you look at the chimp on the left too. And if I hadn't been to their website recently, I wouldn't know which of those was their actual logo, and that's the chimp on the bottom right. But you'll see sometimes the chimp is smiling, winking, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's looking left, sometimes right. So they're a really interesting mix. They absolutely don't take themselves seriously, yet they are deadly serious about their mission, particularly about this quality customer experience. I love what Fast Company says about them, which is MailChimp has added a splash of mischief to a product category not known for, well, much of anything. So it's fun. On to the next slide. Reminding ourselves that secret number three is that brand momentum needs a plan. Next slide. So obviously they're not going to publish their brand strategy online for me to see, or their competitors to see, but we see clear evidence of the strategy. And one of them is a model for building their brand, and that's a freemium model. This allows users to use certain features of the product for free, and then if they like it, they can pay to access more features, and usually it's a more sort of advanced and sophisticated features that you pay for. But in exchange for giving you really useful access to the product, they put their logo at the bottom of any of your emails or newsletters. So this is quite a fair and ethical way of getting your name out. And what a way to communicate their brand and build momentum. In fact, since they went to a freemium model, they've averaged about 3,000 new user sign-ups every day. And that's a massive growth in brand building, not to mention the potential revenue stream from converting some of those freemium users to paying clients. So even though they have a very aggressive growth plans, they will not compromise on hiring the right kind of people who will further their brand. So they hire people who are within themselves brand aligned, and that really helps them to stay consistent. We notice that they focus on other experiences like the customer support, product experience, and their merchandise. So it means they sort through their various touch points. In fact, their merchandise is actually quite important to them. If you go on to the next slide, they say the quality of our merch is a direct reflection on MailChimp and the people who worked together to create it. So they have this kind of cult following, and they have that really nice t-shirt that you can see on the right, not to mention the hairy balloon type gloves, which I love. But occasionally they'll offer t-shirts for free online, and it causes a virtual stampede. So it speaks to their cult following. They also have these little monkey mascots you can see on the left, and they quality test them to see if they've got enough stuffing. So they really take their merch seriously. If you go on to the next slide, their staff are encouraged to come up with crazy, creative ideas, and they have the freedom to pursue them. And so they came up with these knit caps for cats, which were a lot of fun. And on the next slide, they've got them for their clients too. So they've got all these brand ambassadors out there, which is great. So next slide, reminder that secret number 4 is that your brand must be authentic. And I think you can see that MailChimp is on the next slide. I think being able to sustain consistency the way they do is just evidence of deep authenticity. And as I mentioned, having the right people on board really helps to perpetuate that naturally. So they speak it, they live it. And here's what they say on their website in the About Us, and notice the tone. MailChimp is self-funded, profitable, and slowly taking over the world. Our founder-run team of 200 extroverts, introverts, right brains, and left brains work hard to make products that people love to use. Isn't that great? It's just like really a light tone, but really serious about what they're saying. On to the next slide. Secret number 5, remember, was to get staff involved and on board, and they do this in spades. On the next slide, as I mentioned, they actively encourage staff to come up with creative ideas, and they give them the freedom to do that. What they do is they constantly inspire staff on the inside. So they have this weekly coffee hour, and they host writers, designers, just people from different professions to come and inspire their staff and keep them fresh, which is great. Last secret is on the next slide, be a brand control freak. And they do that well too. If you go to the final, or the next slide, it's not the final slide, staff is really well supported to deliver the brand. They have a style guide that Fast Co-Design describes as corporate communication done right. It's an interactive online guide that is almost like a tutorial when you use it. It's that helpful. So it helps staff to think on brand while educating them and equipping them to output something on brand. And I think you can actually find that stuff, that style guide online, so you can go and check it out. Next slide is final secret number 7, which is to prevent runaway sub-brands. So we looked for evidence of sub-brands, and MailChimp certainly has opportunity to create sub-brands, but if you go to the next slide, they don't. We didn't find any. So you see here it says MailChimp for Salesforce there. That's not a word mark. That's the title of a blog post. Salesforce is the gorilla in CRM. It's a huge company and a very popular customer relationship management software. It's sort of the equivalent of, I don't know if you remember, in Microsoft days, and Microsoft was the be-all and end-all, and any software company that had a piece of software that fit with Microsoft would be able to say, oh, this is XYZ for Microsoft. So you could say this is MailChimp for Salesforce. You create your little brand, and everybody knows from Salesforce knows that oh, I can use MailChimp. They don't do that. They've obviously recognized that their master brand is it, and for them they've decided for strategic reasons not to have created this into a sub-brand. So kudos to them. If you just, I don't know if you can read the first line, the first few words of that blog post. I think it says, we've got a whole lot of small businesses, yada, yada. Just, that's their tone. That their brand is so pervasive. It's just a really great example. So that's about it from me. If you go on to the next slide. Questions? Lydia, shall I give this back to you? I think Lydia's coming on board.
Oh, Sharon, am I connected to you? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody, for joining the webinar. Absolute delight to have you all here. I do have a couple of early questions, which I'm delighted to start to pose to you, Sharon. And in terms of next steps, these will last up to 15 minutes, depending on how many questions we have. I'd like to remind you all that you're really welcome to submit questions, and we really encourage you to do so. The email address to send them to is pdevents@iabc.bc.ca. So moving on to the questions, the first one from a communications specialist at Prospera Credit Union. Sharon, how do you know who the right people are to consult on your brand?
That's a really good question, and I'm delighted that that one was raised. Quite often we find that companies tend to think, well, if you involve the senior executive, then you're doing the right thing for defining your brand. But really what you need to do is get down to speaking to people in the organization, and you need to get a representative sample from across the organization. In particular, you need to have frontline staff involved. So at Prospera Credit Union, for example, that would be tellers, anybody who's developing products for them, anybody who is managing their website, because that's a customer touch point, people who are on support calls, that kind of thing. So anybody who touches a customer directly, good to get them involved. It's often good to get representative sampling from board members as well, to get their buy-in. And then, of course, if you can get hold of customers, people who you have good relationship with, those are also some of the right people. But predominantly the right people are a good smattering of your staff. Because even people in accounting, you know, they don't have anything to do with customers directly. But they're supporting the organization, and they will have an opinion about the brand. It's worth hearing quite often. People have insights. So a good representative sample is the right people.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Sharon. That's fantastic. And I actually had a question from my own brand experience. I'm working with a brand at the moment where we're trying to come up with a three-word descriptor for the brand. And so sometimes you'll find a brand will be the name of the company and then three words that describe how they see themselves. I wondered if you've got any tips for helping us choose those words, because I think it's easy to slip into that executive speak of words like innovative, and you think, gosh, what
the hell? The word that everybody uses.
You have to help me out.
So what you're describing is the tagline, I think. And taglines are really useful because they help your logo to say more, and they can also reflect your brand in a snapshot. The thing with taglines is that they have to be based on a well-defined brand. Sometimes taglines are created for marketing campaigns. That's different. That's different because that should carry your campaign message. But if you're going to use it with your logo, it should be very well grounded in your brand definition. So anything that tagline says shouldn't be anything different from what you've defined your brand as.
Thank you, Sharon. And just to remind everybody, questions to pdevents@iabc.bc.ca. I have one more question that's just come in, Sharon. When you start working with a new brand, what are those three key things you look to learn to help you get started? I know often it's, you know, what are those key questions that you're asking that organization to help get the information you need to start off?
It varies from organization to organization to some extent. But some of the things that you're looking to understand is, how would you describe the brand? What are the top three words to describe the brand? And sometimes you can force that to one word. What is the one word you would use to describe this organization? You do need to ask questions that kind of look at the organization from various angles, so that you're getting quite a broad range of data. And then once you've done that, once you've asked those questions, you push them through the funnel to see what the trending essence is of the brand. So Lydia, just remind me again of what the question was. What are the top three?
It was, what are those three questions that you would look to ask when you first start working with a new business to help them with their brand?
So that first one would be, how would you describe the organization? How would you describe the customer experience would be another. What would a third one be? I guess we would always go to what are the strengths and weaknesses. Oh, here's another good question. There's more than three, and they aren't really top three. As I mentioned, you need this board smattering. You also need to learn what are the things that hinder the brand from being the best it can be, so that you know how to mitigate those going forward in your strategy. So those are the kinds of questions we ask as well. And what are the opportunities for the brand? Way more than three. Sorry, couldn't stick to three.
No, I don't mind at all. And so this will be the last question, unless anybody has some more questions, to send pdevents@iabc.dc.ca. Sharon, I just wanted to ask, in terms of your kind of ideal clients when it comes to branding, do you find it easier to brand a younger company or a very well-established company?
It's quite difficult. Given outside-in's philosophy, it's quite difficult for us to brand a startup, say. And it might be better suited for another vendor to work with, a startup, because we believe that brands are driven from the inside out, which means that there needs to be a little bit of history there already. So it's easier to brand an organization that's got some traction, so that you can get a flavor of what the brand is. We have branded very young organizations. We recently branded a private school that's only a year old, and really had to go with the philosophy of what the founder has. And we built the brand around that. But we did caution them that in time to come, as they're more and more established, that the brand should be revisited just to make sure that its tone and its voice is authentic. That's the hardest part of a new company to brand. It's easier to say what they do and what they're going to do, but to find what the tone is and what that brand personality is that you want people to experience is very, very hard when there isn't a bit of history.
Okay, that's super. So I think that brings us to the end of our questions. If anybody else has further questions, having listened to this or having had some time to think about it, you're very welcome to email pdevents@iabc.bc.ca, and we'll send those along to Sharon and get the answers up on the website under a little FAQ section.
And then if I could put you just to go to the next slide, and that's thank you from me. The best I could do is virtual chocolates, but it's better for our waistlines. And then the last slide is, if you want to contact me directly, you have my details there.
Fantastic. It's my great pleasure to thank Sharon for this wonderful presentation. I have to say, fantastic job on the slides. I love a slide with a lot of color, and I feel like these were so easy to follow and absolutely fascinating to view. Also really appreciated those points that we can use in our own branding, and respect that admission from you that it's hard to see the label when you're inside the bottle. I think it's a thing that's very easy to suffer from. It was great advice that you gave us on keeping hold of brand identity, and also the ultimate value of living the brand and giving clients that experience that fits who you are, but also who you want to be. We'll be sending out a survey link shortly following the end of this webinar, and I'd very much encourage everybody to please take the time to complete this survey and send it back to us, as it really helps us make sure that our programming results in events that you'll love and that you find really high value. We'll also be sharing the slides and the audio to all of the attendees, so you can look out for an email from us in the next few days as regards that. Also hope to welcome some of you at our next event. It's a workshop with Kevin Gilbert from Domain 7 taking place on Tuesday, November 6th. Details are to follow. I'd like to conclude by thanking Sharon again for a wonderful presentation and wishing you all a wonderful afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.